You know him as the pen and the voice behind hits like Runaway Train and Misery. He's a Grammy winner, and he's coming to Calgary playing the Stampede on Friday. Soul Asylum's Mr. Dave Perner. Happy to have you on the Windspeaker Radio Network.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Yeah, so got a few questions here for you. You guys came up before and, you know, during the entire grunge era, and I remember those days vividly in high school, even here in Canada. Now, in your opinion, what was it about grunge music that led an entire generation of young music lovers to gravitate towards it?
Well, it seems to me like it was bubbling up for quite some time. I mean, the expression grunge had not been entered into the situation until I was probably 10 years into it. So it was known as different things, college rock, alternative became an expression. Where the Soul Asylum came out of the punk rock scene, that the hardcore punk thing was happening, and that was just super fast. I mean, our name was Loud Fast Rules before it was Soul Asylum, and a lot of punk bands driving around the country in vans and all sleeping on each other's couches and this, that, and the other thing. In Minneapolis, it was Soul Asylum and The Replacements and Husker Du, and there was a whole sort of scene on the West Coast and the East Coast and everywhere in between. Didn't become grunge until the expression didn't appear, I think, until the Seattle bands were tuning down. But it was a sludgier sound, and the speed thing kind of went away, and more kind of, I don't want to say metal, but it had a thicker, and, you know, for lack of a better expression, it had a pretty grungy sound.
Absolutely.
You know, it was something that sort of evolved out of the punk thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to, you know, putting labels on bands, I feel like people didn't quite know exactly where to categorize Soul Asylum after the first few albums, and you guys are kind of doing your own thing, a bit of an evolving sound. What is it that you think made Soul Asylum so unique and stand out from the other bands of the early 90s?
Well, I think that even in the very beginning, we had a little bit of a more melodic kind of thing going on than a lot of bands. And a lot of the music that I liked, you know, it was singers that did not have perfect pitch, to put it one way. But that didn't matter, you know? So if you're talking about singing in a way that it's a form of expression where you don't sit around and listen to John Lydon and go, well, he's a little flat, or he's a little sharp, yeah, or this, that, and the other thing. I mean, the precedent was there that it was more important what you were saying than if you were singing it pitch perfectly. And, you know, the rage and the anger and all that kind of affected that too. No one wanted to sound pretty, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was a combination of things. I mean, if I listen to my first record, I'm still basically figuring out how to sing. And there's a lot of yelling, and there's a lot of screaming, and there's a lot of just unbridled aggression that is not really paying attention to singing in tune, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was just a path that we were naturally just on, because whatever, I start singing and it comes out a certain way. So for me, it made the music more versatile. I had more access to different influences and inflections and things like that, in a way that, you know, to me, it was an open book as far as whether I wanted to go fast or slow or fucking reggae or sideways or whatever the case may
yeah,
be. We were just one of those bands that was kind of exploring different angles, as opposed to a band that finds their formula and just every song kind of sounds the same.
Yeah. Now, you know, heading back to talking about the early days of Soul Asylum, like I feel like, you know, the mass audiences tended to identify with that that whole lighter side of Soul Asylum, but there's definitely some hidden gems throughout that catalog prior to all the commercial success you've seen, like the Hang Time and the While You're Out, both albums with great songs. What are some of the deeper cuts that are a few of Dave's personal favorites, which might get overlooked in your catalog?
I'm thinking about Hang Time because there's so many weird kind of experiments that go each and every direction. There's like there's some pretty interesting heavy kind of stuff that's almost complicated in a way, and I kind of was into that around Hang Time. I mean, at times, like, some of these songs had 10 different parts, and it's like fucking punk rock Rush or something. I don't know what the hell it is.
Awesome. Now, you're coming to Calgary, playing the Calgary Stampede on Friday. You guys have toured relentlessly throughout your career. Are there any standout memories for you when I use the word either Edmonton or Calgary?
What do you mean?
Any fond memories of anywhere in Alberta, be it Edmonton or Calgary?
Well, yeah, I mean, we started in Winnipeg because that's the closest place to Minneapolis. And over time, we got to pretty much play all over Canada. And, you know, there's a lot of great memories. I mean, the clubs that we played at in Winnipeg were stripper bars half the time and punk rock bars the other half the time. And you'd kind of be sharing. There's a hotel attached to it where you're running into the strippers in the hallway and people are getting on and off the stage. And it was hilarious. I mean, we loved it. And always friendly, always good people. And that seemed to be, I mean, I love Canada. I love the feeling that you get when you're hanging around with a bunch of Canadian people going, wow, these aren't, they lack that prickish thing that Americans have. Don't tell anyone I said that, but anyways.
Absolutely. So much has changed in the music industry since the 90s. You know, it's a totally different beast than it once was. What is, like, maybe one thing that you like within that change and maybe something that you absolutely can't stand about today's industry?
Well, I mean, the obvious answer to that question is that when we started off, there was no internet. It just didn't exist, which I would think for a younger person in a band today, that would be hard to imagine. There was no cell phones. There was none of that. It's hard for me to even understand how quickly it went from selling records to just moving information over the internet. And that to this day is confounding because I still listen to vinyl and I like to buy records. And yeah, I don't care if that makes me sound old fashioned. It just sounds better. And the MP3, I immediately thought was just, it sounded like terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
and it's difficult to understand why people don't know the difference. Then again, if that's all you've ever heard is an MP3, that's what you expect it to sound like. So to a certain point, it was kind of a disadvantage for me to go, well, this all sounds like sh-. And, you know, it seemed compromised. But that's just what people are listening to. So you have to sort of, you have to man up and not be a Luddite or a technophobe and be that crusty old curmudgeon that's going, whoa, back in my day. Be like an asshole. Yeah, I mean, I think that's within the lifetime of the band, that's pretty much the most significant change. And, you know, I mean, a record store in Minneapolis just reopened, and it was just great being back in that building with records. So it just it goes around and around a little bit, but basically it's just a little more impersonal in the way that the internet is.
Now, as a musician and a songwriter myself, I'm always trying to pick the brains of some of the great writers out there. Is there a formula that has tended to be more successful for you, like, you know, chorus and hook out, or progression first, concept first, whatever it may be? Or is it always changing and different in your writing process?
Wow. Well, we just finished a new record, and it really does embrace just about every kind of tact or approach I could take to it. I mean, in the beginning, it was more, we would practice 5 to 6 days a week, and I'd bring in parts, and I'd go, okay, let's play this part over and over again, and then the next day, I would have the next part. And we just sort of drill through it and go, okay, well, that's getting boring, so let's stop doing that and then go to the next part. And then over a period of time, I started writing on the acoustic guitar, and it sort of changed all that in a way that it strips away all the distractions, and you kind of get to the heart or the core of what it is that you're trying to sing about or talk about or whatever. So does it start with lyrics? Sometimes, yes. It's like I write a few pages in a notebook, and then I put a tune to it. Does it start with a tune, like a melody? Yes, it does. Any way, shape, or form that something can come together. And I used to carry around a dictaphone all the time with these little tapes, and I had these piles of these little tapes. And yeah, I remember I was running across the street in New York, and my dictaphone fell on the ground, and it just exploded, and everything went every different direction, and the light changed to green, and I'm looking at this little micro cassette, and I'm seeing a car coming, and I'm running out to the street and grabbing it and running off the street, and just keeping track of notebooks. I pretty much remember when I've lost notebooks, which is just the worst feeling. I did lose a notebook in Canada. I do remember. And that took me a long time to get over. And, you know, you're calling the hotel and you're like, panic situations. And, you know, I've lost notebooks. And, you know, I use my phone as a dictaphone now. And if that falls into a situation where I can't find it, that's just a big panic for me. And, you know, just keeping all the pieces together. But sometimes it can be more of a kind of a hootenanny kind of thing where I'll just come and practice with a simple 4-chord song and everyone can follow along, and there it is.
Yeah.
And times it's a little more, hey, I got this awesome riff, let's fucking rock it out for a while and get it together and turn it into a song kind of thing.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if there's a small town in Canada with somebody sitting in a garage band that has Dave Perner's tunes in his head.
I'm telling you. And the ones you lose are always the ones you think are the best.
Oh, like, that's so true. Awesome. Once again, Dave Perner from Soul Asylum playing the Calgary Stampede this Friday. Get there early. I want to thank you for your time, Dave, the tunes, the laughs, and for still cranking out all these tunes for us after all these years.
Thanks, man. I'm looking forward, and it's not my first rodeo, so I'll see you there.
Awesome. Sounds good. Take care, brother.
All right, man.
Bye-bye.